Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox. My pronouns are he, him. I will be your keeper.
Hello, I'm Becky Annison. My pronouns are she, her, and I will be playing Gabby the Surge, and her pronouns are also she, her.
And I'm James Torrance. My pronouns are he, him, and I will be playing Azure Wings, the last, whose pronouns are also he, him.
Hi, folks. I'm Nick Bate. My pronouns are he, him. And I'm playing the Viscount Greaves, who is the Shade. His pronouns are also he, him.
Hi, I'm Sue Elliott. My pronouns are she, her. I'll be playing August the Found, whose pronouns are also she, her.
And today we are here to play Apocalypse Keys by Jamila R. Najadi.
Just before we get into the session proper, I just want to talk through some of the key mechanics in Apocalypse Keys, just so everybody knows what they're doing.
So, like, probably the most key mechanic is darkness tokens, okay? So, in this game, like other PBTA games, you roll 2d6 and you add a number to the result of the roll. But in this case, it's not a stat or any such thing. Instead, you choose between, I think it's 0 to 3 tokens you can add. But you have to get the tokens from somewhere. And the way you get those tokens is by hitting the triggers on your character sheet. So I'm just going to have a quick look at one of them. It so happens I've got Viscount Greaves open. So Viscount Greaves can gain 2 to 4 darkness tokens when he feels ignored or unimportant, when he reacts with cold reason and logic, when he asks someone to follow his instructions, and when he asks someone to ignore their heart. The way I propose to do this is a completely player-administered. There is no mother may I mechanic here. It's just when you notice you've done it, give yourself some darkness tokens. You decide whether it's 2 to 4 for your own capricious reasons. And there is a fifth way, which everybody's got, which is the same as everybody's, which is embodying a condition that affects you. So conditions are a separate thing. They're basically a bit like your hit points, kind of. So when you take harm, you'll probably be ticking off conditions. When things go wrong, you might well have to tick off conditions. They're a sort of generic way of tracking a kind of bit of personal grief that you've come to. But each playbook's got its own conditions and you roleplay them. I mean, they're just literally a word, I think. There's no description anywhere of what they mean. You decide. And if you embody those, you can get 2 to 4 darkness tokens.
Hit points of the heart.
Hit points of the heart. I love it. Yeah, you should send that to Jammy, definitely. So if you fulfill those triggers, you get your darkness tokens. If you spend the darkness tokens, you can activate your moves. As mentioned previously, if you roll too high, it's a bit bad, just as if you roll too low, it's bad. So it's a bit of a judgment call how many darkness tokens you want to spend. Unlike darkness tokens, you can spend bonds, which you have already got some of through the bond process that we did. You can spend them to modify a roll after you've rolled the dice, and you can do it downwards as well as upwards. So if you've rolled too high, you might be able to save yourself that way.
So when you say spend the bond, does the bond number remain the same afterwards?
No, so exactly. Your bond number goes down. The relationship's still there. I don't think there's anything. So it's the relationships are kind of separate from the bonds, really. Bonds are kind of like strings or whatever. As far as I can make out, you don't actually have to have any help from the relevant person to use your bond, which is kind of in contrast with other games that have mechanics like that. You have to describe a moment or flashback that helps your PC avoid consequences or control your supernatural powers, and it should involve the character in question.
Can it? Could you also treat it like teamwork? Like, specifically ask that character if they're present to, you know, help you control your...
Well, it's a moment or flashback, so I think the answer is yes. The moment could be a moment of them helping you think. Mm. That you can also use your bonds with what the darkness demands of you, but if you do that, when you do it, you describe how you're becoming closer to becoming a harbinger of the apocalypse. So it works exactly the same way, except that it's horrible. Going down my list of mechanics to explain, if you end up with 5 or more darkness tokens after you've made a move, then it will trigger Torn Between, which I don't think we need to particularly worry about the details of. It basically gives you some horrible choices that could lead to you losing all your darkness tokens, could lead to you gaining ruin, could lead to you losing a bond. You can also trigger that fictionally by literally just being torn between your monstrous side and your human side, or being tempted by what the darkness demands of you.
Okay, but no matter how many darkness tokens you've racked up, that doesn't trigger automatically until after a move has occurred.
That seems to be the case, yeah, that's right. So I guess the answer is, if you've got like 7 and you spend 3 of them on a move, then everything's fine. But if you only spend 2, you're going to trigger that. There's like loads of different moves that can interact with your ruin, which I'll come to, by the way, your conditions, your bonds. I'm not going to go through them all, but you should note that revealing your heart is a great way to... Yeah, so you can get bonds by revealing your heart. You can clear conditions, you can mark XP, and you can clear ruin. So it's a just sort of general kind of healing move, if you like. And it, as it sounds like, it's about kind of opening up to another character.
And it works both ways too. Like in that interaction, if both of you engage, then both of you get the benefit of the move.
Yeah, I think that is correct. But I propose that we do a proper zoom in on each mechanic the first time we trigger it. That's probably the thing to do. You can also... So conditions I've mentioned, you can get from rolling badly, just generally. You can get it from taking harm. And if you get all 4 of your conditions ticked off, then you hit breaking point, which looks a lot like Darkest Self from Monster Hearts. It's like that each playbook has got a specific kind of way of being a dick that they've got to then carry out. But I think it's more like being an apocalyptic dick rather than just a kind of dickish dick. And when you do that, you mark ruin. And ruin, so ruin is one of your 2 XP tracks, as I see it. One is like proper XP, right? And it's quite challenging to build up a lot of XP in this game. You've basically got like 3 questions that you ask yourself at the end of each session. And I'll tell you what they are in a second. And if you answer them in the affirmative, then you get a point of XP. So that's a maximum of 3 XP plus per session plus anything that's generated by your moves. The track is 8 boxes long, not 5. So it's probably going to, you know, like you might get an advance every couple of sessions if you're hammering it, is my read on it. But we'll see whether that turns out to be true. In contrast, you've got a ruin track, which I think is only 5 boxes, and which generates ruin advances. And ruin advances are brokenly powerful. They're really, really good, and you're going to want to use them all the time. But you use them by marking yet more ruin. And if you get too many ruin advances, then you turn into a harbinger. I leave that, you know, that's kind of a strategic decision whether you want to hammer ruin and turn into... who's that character from Marvel Comics Universe? The computer that turns into a monster?
Ultron?
Ultron, yeah. Whether you want to turn into Ultron. Obviously, it's nothing like Ultron. I'm making a very candid reference to... the MCU, or whether you want to try and hold back and not get quite as many gooby powers, it's up to you. But I think it'll be a lot easier to get ruin XP, that is what I think. The XP questions that I just mentioned are, did you express your monstrous nature and or express your humanity? Pretty easy to hit that one, I would have thought. But it's your judgment whether you did it as well. Did you learn something significant about yourself and or your impending ruin? And did you learn something significant about a fellow monster? So each of those that you answer yes to, you're going to get an XP. Should be reasonably easy to get all 3 most of the time, I would have thought, but we'll see. And there's also a question which is, did you uncover at least 1 key of the apocalypse? And if you don't, you have to mark ruin. It'll be a bit sad if that ever gets triggered, really. Right, that was a lot. So don't worry, we'll like revisit stuff as and when we need to. Don't worry too much about the basic moves either. They're really, really like general, and we'll trigger them when we trigger them. Probably the single remaining mechanic that's important to understand is this is a game about trying to find and close a apocalypse gate or whatever they're called, something like that. Doom's door. You got to find Doom's door and deal with it before someone else uses it to trigger an apocalypse. And you do that by accumulating keys. Keys are just basically clues. And when you want to find a clue, when you think that now is a good time for me to kind of discover something, you can make a move like that's called grasping keys. At that point, if you roll well, you'll get a key, which is, as I say, is a clue. And when you've accumulated enough keys, then you can attempt to unlock Doom's door. But if you don't have enough keys, you're going to be rolling at a penalty. It's all based on how many keys you've got.
So where it refers to key, despite this kind of capital letters key of the apocalypse terminology, that is anything that's a clue? Like, you know, we dust for fingerprints and we find them, that's a key of the apocalypse?
No, it's a formal mechanical category of things. So there's a move called grasping keys, which is triggered when you search for a clue, or investigate for signs of the apocalypse, or use your powers of darkness to gather information. When you do that, I will give you a clue from a list of clues that I have for the scenario. I will contextualize it and so on, but you will get a, it's a bit like Lovecraft Esque, if you like, that the person who's describing it, which in this case is always the keeper, says what the clue was.
Right, but it could potentially be a piece of mundane information. You know, you look through the security footage and you see blah blah blah.
Yes, although having read through the list of clues for the current scenario that we're going to use, it looks like they are pretty much always supernatural. You might see them through a security camera, but the actual information is going to be pretty non-mundane.
Tell me if this is correct, but my sense is that the keys are largely about figuring out what the door is, where it is, and maybe what's on the other side of it. Is that?
Yeah, so the keys themselves are not necessarily that obviously like that. They are bits of stuff that's clearly kind of wrong or intriguing, or it's not always obvious how they're going to relate to Doom's door. I would put it that way. And so what you have to do when you go to unlock Doom's door, you say what you believe the answers to certain questions are. So the questions are, who or what is the Harbinger? What is the ancient door of power? How will the Harbinger unlock the door? Who or what are they using to unlock the door? What is beyond the door? And have you accounted for all the keys? Is a final question you ask when you've kind of pulled all that together. So essentially, you're coming up with a theory of kind of what's going on, and then you roll to see whether you're right. Which, for those who played Brindlewood Bay, it's kind of the same thing.
So we come up with the theory. The mechanics tell us whether the theory was right or not, but it's the GM that's coming up with the clues that contribute to the theory.
That's correct. And if you roll well, your theory is correct, regardless of whatever I might have had in mind. And I'm encouraged not to have very much in mind, quite frankly.
Feels like a good way to live.
Yeah. So it is possible, if you roll badly on unlocking Doom's door, to be wrong. And if that's the case, there's a doomsday clock which advances. So there's always like a consequence. And if you mess around, the doomsday clock might advance as well. Anyway, I don't want you to worry too much about that. The important thing to understand is you are going to need to be looking for these clues. If you don't do that, bad stuff will happen. And at some point, you will need to decide what you think those clues mean. And if you don't do that, bad stuff will happen. Simple as that, really. Right, that's it. I'm not going to bore you anymore with mechanics. Play out a day in the Division. So it says here we should stick to short vignettes or moments for each character. I've got some questions that I can ask. It looks to me like I'm supposed to ask a question to each character in turn. Gabby, what is a mundane ritual that you look forward to? Bearing in mind we're playing out a day in the Division.
Yes, I have breakfast at the Division. I look forward to coming in for breakfast in the canteen. It is a human tradition that I have adopted, and I look forward to it every day that I'm working, shall we say. So I come into the canteen, I order a full English breakfast, and I eat it, and I enjoy it, even though it is subpar.
Yes, I think breakfast in the Division is... everything's in those little metal trays, right? There's scrambled egg, kind of cold and slightly leathery. There's sausages, slightly overdone. Bacon, unnervingly pink.
With bits of gristle in it, please.
You always get the gristly bits, absolutely. There's that funny little toast machine. There's the one thing that you get fresh is the toast. You get the bread and it goes in and it kind of slowly goes on a conveyor belt round the grill element and comes out. maybe the right level of brown or maybe not.
I remember the first time I went to a hotel and saw one of those. I thought it was so fancy.
They're still special to me. I'm not above bread toasting machine.
And you've got the... You haven't named the cafeteria lady, have you?
Beryl.
Oh, I was going to say Gladys, but...
Oh, sorry, no, Gladys.
Maybe it's Beryl and Gladys. Maybe there's two of them. Beryl and Gladys.
Yeah.
One of them will generally be, like, doing cooking and another one operating the till, because obviously nothing in this life is free.
Can I have two more things on my breakfast platter, if that's okay? Yeah. To really set the mood, that clearly there should be half a tin of tin tomatoes heated up plain and fried bread.
Yes.
Fried bread. I had never seen fried bread till I moved to this country. It is the weirdest thing.
It's very British.
I think fried bread's really great and everyone should have it at least one point in their life.
I think it's Irish as well, isn't it?
It's possible.
It's weird, whichever it is.
I'm going to explain what that is for the American audience and anybody who's not British listening to this. So fried bread is when once you have cooked your fry up in the frying pan, you know, and you've taken out all the eggs and bacon and whatever, and there's just grease left in the pan, you cut up pieces of bread into triangles, preferably, and fry them in the leftover grease, salty grease. And serve them alongside everything else.
I think this is a bit like in America, the idea that everything is made with real creamery butter. In Britain, the equivalent is everything is fried in poor quality grease.
It just sounds English to me. I'm sorry if it's actually Irish, but it sounds like English food to me. Can I inject myself ever so briefly in this scene, if that's okay? I'm imagining, I think the Viscount Greaves comes up for breakfast, lunch and dinner in the cafeteria, but I'm gas in a suit. I don't eat. So I come up and I sit down and I sit here for 30 minutes and then I get up and I go back to whatever it is I was doing. So sometimes, I mean, maybe when Gabby's in for breakfast, we actually sit together, but I think a lot of the time when someone comes into the cafeteria, I'm just sitting in a corner.
Cool. Does anybody else come to breakfast, by the way? Just out of curiosity, seeing shaking head.
I think that I invite everybody every day in some sort of trying to be human attempt at creating bonds and socialising with my co-workers. You know, there's always a co-worker who's always trying to get everybody to go out to lunch all the time. Sorry if that's you, listener. When other people just want to sit at their desk with a sandwich and read their book. But I think that Gabby is that co-worker. She's always inviting everybody to breakfast. Hardly anybody ever turns up. But that's okay. She's here for
Except
the
Except Viscount Greaves, who just sits there and...
And occasionally Viscount Greaves.
Cool.
Unless other people want to turn up to breakfast. I don't want to fear that you are not a breakfast lover.
I mean, probably on the occasions that I do, like, you know, I'm Danforth, I'm shoveling for him full of any... I don't really care. So it's like, you know... Plate of cold baked beans, just shovel that in, that's nutrition. Then, you know, I slump Danforth back, I phase dimensionally out of his brain, and there's this butterfly thing, and I'm like, right, now, I've got some very specific requirements, Gladys and Beryl.
They get out the little roasted beetles or something for you. Yum. Yeah, well, I'm going to ask you a question next, actually, Azure Wings. Which is, why are you still recovering from the last investigation?
Clearly, I got damaged. I was phased out of Danforth, and my insectile Akanari body took a hit. It was a high speed air collision. Again, do we want to lean to the comedy or the supernatural?
Yes.
Okay, then it was a mid air collision with a bird, but it was an evil supernatural bird. It was a bat. It was a cave full of bats. We were in a cave full of evil supernatural bats, and I was trying to navigate in the dark. There was a mid-air collision. My delicate, trans-dimensional, shimmering, membranous wings got badly ruptured.
Oh, yeah, and that probably jars you. It feels like your nerves are jangling for days afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Viscount Greaves,
yes.
Someone important wants to speak to you. It just says, what do you think it's about? Which is a bit weird. It doesn't ask you who it is. I think you should also say who it is.
I think that the someone important who wants to speak to me is the building manager. What would you call that person in a big old civil service organization? Like the person who's responsible for
estate manager, maybe
grounds. Yeah. Because they've caught wind that I have a laboratory somewhere in the building that's not on their approved charts. That's what I think they want to talk to me about.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that is what they want to talk to you about. We're just doing vignettes, so we're not going to play through the scene. How do you try to fob them off?
Well, so I think so far all of the requests for information and for a meeting are coming through the internal mail, and I have variously taken that internal mail and delivered it to the wrong people, set it on fire, marked it return to sender, or just not answered it.
Okay, cool.
And of course, every time I see them in a corridor or in the cafeteria, I turn the other way. But I know it's only a matter of time.
Mm.
And I don't know yet what I'm going to tell them. I don't even know why they want to know.
Okay, August. There's a monstrous agent who's been forcibly retired. Why are you asked to check in on them?
So this agent, who I'm going to call Gladstone, I knew him through our ancient weapons of magic work, and I know that he'd started playing around with forging some of his own stuff, and it got a little bit out of hand, so they decided maybe it was time for him to step down. But there's been a few reports in the area that we know he's living of strange noises and smells and rumblings coming from the shed in his back garden. So I might just need to stick my head round the door, make sure he doesn't blow himself up and take half the city with him.
How do you handle it? Do you take away his toys or?
So he's quite an obsessive character, and I think I'm able to successfully persuade him that possibly model trains might just scratch that itch a little bit more than magical weapons do. And
magical model trains or mundane model trains?
But I mean, that it's arguably safer than weapons. So I'll try and persuade him of the possibilities of magical model trains, and he seems to go for it as well.
Emphasis on seems to.
Yeah,
he absolutely hands over the magical weapons and commits to trying a course of model train building. He's got this little nervous twitch. Something tells you that you'll be back there soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I suggest that maybe the estate manager doesn't have a name that any of us are aware of? They're just the estate manager.
Okay, yeah.
I love that.
Cool. So I think the next day after breakfast, you all have a meeting in your diaries with Mr. Briggs, your handler, in committee room C, which is the one with the wobbly chair. There's just enough chairs for you all, but one of them's wobbly, so it's the one that I presume everyone tries to avoid getting it. Maybe someone there likes wobbly chairs, I don't know. I will assume that most of you are on time by default, but is anybody like gratuitously late or early? No? No one's picking up that one? That's fine. So you're all pretty much on time. Briggs is bang on time, like the clock in the room ticks, and he marches in. So Briggs is a former military man, you think, though he doesn't talk about his past career. He's kind of strapping, clearly sort of physically well-built man, but who you surmise has had too long of a career as a desk civil servant, munching on the communal biscuit tin and so on, and has got built a bit of a gut to go with it. So he's got sort of somehow manages to be both impressively, sort of physically impressive, but also a bit kind of middle-aged. And he marches in and says, "Right, your mission is to visit Isle Zero. An interdimensional scar has opened into the nightmare realm." That's all ancient history, of course. But one of the teenagers who pilots the Halimors there has gone missing. Any questions?
Pretty much every proper noun that you've just used.
I'll nod.
Are we cleared to know about the Nightmare Realm, Briggs?
He stares at you for a long moment, looking slightly irritated, and he says, "Listen, Danforth, whatever your name is, as your wings, of course you are cleared. Good grief, man. What kind of an official do you think I am, that I just spew forth facts that you're not entitled to know? Certainly not."
That never entered my mind. So, the Nightmare Realm.
Yes, the Nightmare Realm. Keep up. Isle Zero. You've not heard of it, then?
I was more worried about the Nightmare Realm, but I suppose we're going to Isle Zero, so let's start with Isle Zero.
Well, yes, Isle Zero. 20 years ago, looks like here, the creature that was living inside the volcano on the island was awoken and tore a rift in reality to the Nightmare Realm. That's all perfectly normal, been going on for a while now. Of course, gigantic monsters come out of the rift from time to time, that's to be expected. Some of them are... friendly is the wrong word. Biddable? Yes, biddable. And through experimentation, it's been discovered that teenagers can be psychically linked to those monsters and use them, sort of pilot them, sort of control them to fight off the terrors that come out of the rift. As I say, it's all in the briefing, but one of them has gone missing and I'd like you to investigate. Any questions? He repeats.
Why teenagers? What's special about their brains?
Do I look like a scientist, Nye? Do I look as though someone who stays up at night reading scientific research papers?
Do you want me to answer that question?
It's irrelevant because I don't. That's the important thing. I don't know. For whatever reason, teenagers are the ones that can do it. And as soon as they reach a certain age, they cease to be able to maintain the link.
So the teenagers, they don't physically phase into the brains of the monsters. They have a different way of doing that.
Yes, it's not everybody has to do things physically.
No, I understand.
Perfectly normal psychic link, I believe.
Clarifying question, the teenagers are psychic?
I'll leave you to explore that one in play, I think. Or are you asking your handler that question?
No, I was specifically asking the handler that question.
Oh, you were? Okay, fine. He gives you a long, hard stare and says, "We've been over this, Greaves. You don't need to know the answer to that question, because you are not, I repeat, not going to be doing anything to any psychics. Particularly nothing involving putting them near your mouth."
With respect to, I don't have one anymore.
That's beside the point, and you well know it. I don't want to have that conversation with you again.
Understood.
Good.
But are they psychic, though?
I'm not familiar with the technicalities, Greaves. I'm sure you'll be able to tell when you get into a room with them and smell them.
Do you still smell things, Greaves?
No, not in the normal sense. I do ingest gases.
Delightful. Well, if there are no further questions,
I have
suggest...
a question.
Yes?
When are we leaving?
I was just getting to that. Door number 372 in about 5 minutes.
We're travelling...
Unfortunately, the door does not open at Isle Zero. You will need to take a connecting ferry, which I'm reliably informed is both lengthy and tedious. Bring reading material.
How long is the briefing, sir?
He pats a little folder of papers next to him.
It's not going to be sufficient.
Pushes it across the table to you. Well, you may as well get started. 5 minutes. It's not long. Well, off you go.
When one of these teenagers psychically pilots a giant monster, does it cause any permanent brain damage to the giant monster?
Did I mention that I have not read any of the relevant scientific papers? I think I did. Sometimes I do get confused in my old age.
I just, you know...
Danforth, I'll see what I can check out from the library before we head off.
Well, you better be quick.
Keen to know to what...
You've got 4 minutes.
The sooner we get where this there, the sooner you can ask one of them if you like.
Oh, yes. The teenagers will know. It's good for me to know to what extent I relate to the condition of these teenagers who Greaves is probably going to eat.
I don't think that's very kind, Danforth.
No, I'm sorry. Just, you know, when there's something that relates to the incident and I get tetchy. It's okay. I'm sorry. I'm going to read the briefing material now.
Just before we go any further, I've got a few things I want to say about the mystery we're about to play. We've got a line around child abuse, and we've set the age of the teenagers on aisle zero to be, I think, if we said a minimum of 16, so as to avoid breaking that line. So I think that means they're probably, like, overall, they're probably older than the scenario envisages, but, you know, whatever. Also, the game has a bunch of cool scenarios that come with it, and some of them are set in the Philippines, and I haven't chosen those ones simply because I worry that we, as an all-white group sitting in England, might not be able to do justice to a scenario set in the Philippines. But they look like really cool scenarios, and I think, you know, we'd be really happy to play those if we weren't recording it for a podcast. I just think it's fine to kind of mess that up in the confines of your own living room, and it's less fine if you're on a podcast.
I actually read one of those because I wanted to see what one of the scenarios looked like without reading one that we were going to be doing. Yeah, I agree with all of the above. It looks super rad. I would have felt rightly so very, very white if we'd been playing that on mics.
And the final thing I wanted to mention is the complexity of the mystery. So the mystery is complexity 8. That means that you need 8 clues, or sorry, 8 keys, I should say, before you are breaking even, and therefore rolling at plus 0 when you attempt to solve the details of the gate. So you probably don't want to be rolling at plus 0. So you probably actually in practice want more than 8 keys before you make that check. But you know, you can make it any time. It's completely fine.
I will just remind you to keep checking your darkness token triggers to make sure you're accumulating any darkness tokens that you might want. They're very useful. And then I suggest that Azure Wings should do his start of session move.
Excellent. And, you know, since we've done the briefing, there's something for me to riff on there. So that's a good sequence to do things in. So, you know, as we're going on the ferry or whatever, obviously I'm, you know, turning direct to camera and breaking the fourth wall and saying, I remember in the jungles of the Cretaceous when I would leap into the mind of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, another fellow Akinari would leap into the mind of a Triceratops, and we would battle the great beasts against one another. A wondrous sport, the joust of kings, and I thought that such things never would be in this world again. And they never will, but perhaps what these teenagers are doing is some dim echo of the glory of my people. So, now I roll some dice. First I say what I'm hoping for. Well, there's an option to uncover a key. So, yeah, maybe I am hoping for some sort of insight into monster piloting from my own experience. Okay, so I can roll. I've plucked a darkness token on the basis that I felt lonely and or rejected. So I will...
I think you have to take 2 to 4 for what it's worth. So you've...
Thank you very much. I was forgetting that I have to feel at least 2 points of loneliness or rejection on any one occasion. So I'll say that I did. And yeah, blow those both on the roll. So 2d6 plus 2 gives me 10, which, remind me, is that the badness threshold? No, that's in the goodness threshold.
That's in the goodness threshold. Nice.
So I get to choose 2. So I'm inclined to uncover a key unless that would inconvenience Josh, in which case I can not.
No, that's absolutely fine. I come up with something. Do you want to make your other choice while I'm just having a think?
Either gain a bond with a fellow monster because they remind me of someone from my past, or describe how the tragedy of my people haunts me, gain a bond on what the darkness demands of me. Can't think of an obvious way to relate that to any of the rest of you, so I think I will just take the bond on what the darkness demands of me, because I think I've pretty much described how the tragedy of my people haunts me. No more dinosaur wrestling.
So sad. We all miss the dinosaur wrestling. Yeah, okay. First clue is going to be something exciting that you get from... describe the long overture of the apocalypse and how it claimed your people and uncover a key. So this is your memories granting you an epiphany. That's what's actually happening here.
So I don't know what kinds of things you're expected to offer up as key. So, I guess the one that, like, the more logical angle is, you know, it's some sort of insight into monster riding. I suppose the other angle is that maybe, you know, the nightmare realm, the source of these monsters, relates in some way to the, you know, terrible cosmic entities that destroyed my people. Or, yeah, I don't know what keeper side stuff you've got going on. So
I think as you approach the island. The ship is having to move like painfully slowly, and the reason is that there are these gigantic barriers that you can't see until you get really close to them. So initially it just looks like you're kind of chugging out into the sea. And then as you get really, really close, there's a kind of a darkness and a charge of electricity in the air. And then the boat kind of pauses, and anyone who's near the bridge will probably hear them kind of radioing somebody on the, presumably on the island, saying lower gate one. And then the visible barrier sort of disappears and the boat chugs forward, and then you see it close again behind you. Once you've got through about three of these, you start to feel a tugging at the edge of your mind that you have not felt for about 65 million years. And it gets stronger the closer you get. It is a familiar sensation, an ancient entity that your people did battle with and that they sealed inside a rift. You knew them only as the Queen of Monsters. And since you buried them inside the rift, there's been a psychic connection between the two of you. And now you can feel that connection again. You know that this rift that has opened up is the self same one that you sealed all those eons ago.
Sweet. I gloomily and portentously relate this to my companions upon the boat.
The boat continues its ponderous progress through the shields. And by the time you've got through the last one, you can no longer see any sign of the outside world. But the island, previously invisible, has become visible to you. A jungle island with a single ancient volcano rising from the trees in the centre of the island. And there is a quay that the boat pulls up at, where there is someone waiting to meet you.
Sorry, Josh, I was hoping to grab a moment with August while we were still on the boat before we arrived at the...
Awesome, yeah, no, that's fine. Wind time back and make that happen.
August, where do I find you? I come looking for you, and where would I find you?
I think I'm out. I'm down in the engine room. It's nice and warm.
Nice.
And the continuous sound of the engine I find very soothing.
Are you always cold? Do I remember that?
Yeah, I am always cold, yeah.
Great. Okay, so it probably takes me a little while to find you. The first place I probably look is out on the deck, taking in the view, and instead I find you in the exact opposite spot. And sort of in my diving suit, I sort of clump up beside you and say, August, can we talk for a moment?
Yeah, of course we can, Greaves. Well, is something bothering you?
I want you to know that if indeed these teenagers are psychic, they're safe. I won't... I'll keep it under control.
Okay. Is there something else on your mind, maybe? What you want to bring up? I mean, we've had dealings with psychics before, and you've never sought to reassure me like this?
Yes, you're right, but these are teenagers, and the orphanage, and I just felt like teenagers are different. I wanted you to know. I won't let anything happen.
Well, that's nice of you to say, Greaves. I appreciate that. And don't worry, I won't let anything happen either.
Yes, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Are you revealing your heart there, do you think?
I think I am, yes.
Okay.
I don't currently have any darkness tokens and don't feel like I've triggered any of my ways of getting them, so I think I'm just rolling flat on this one. What was that? You were about to say something, I think?
Oh, I was just going to say, I was actually fishing for darkness tokens as well there, by asking someone to open their emotions to me.
Yeah, well, you bet.
Wow, that is a great trigger.
It sure is. So, I rolled a 7, which I could shift with a bond, but I'm inclined not to.
Right, okay. So in that case, something interrupts or undermines the moment, an omen, consequence, or an aspect of the mystery itself. Okay, in that case, I'm going to say that just after August says, I won't let it happen either, there's an alarm, like, you know, the old air raid sirens? Yeah, you're hearing basically something that sounds very much like one of those, and there's kind of a moment where you're like, hang on, why am I hearing that? And then there's people shouting and running up onto the deck. Those of you who are up on deck will see this hulking insectoid monstrosity that has emerged from the trees and is lurching towards the ship. You probably can surmise this is one of the terrors that they mentioned that come out of the rift, but it would seem that right at this moment there isn't anybody there. One of the bonded teenagers to defend the boat looks like it's going to be up to you.
I'll immediately jump into action and I'll put my hand on August's arm and say, August, find the others. I'll get to the bridge. Meet me there.
August nods and jumps into action as well.
And I'm going to take my two darkness tokens for asking someone to follow my instructions.
We'll finish it there. But what we should do is check our XP triggers, which we've only had like 5 seconds of play in effect, but you might still have managed to hit some of them. So you may as well look in on it. Obviously, I'm sure everyone remembers exactly what they were.
I can read. I've got them up if that's helpful.
Yeah, it is actually.
So, the first one is, did you express your monstrous nature and or express your humanity? If yes, mark 1 XP. How do you want to do this, Josh? Do you want us to talk through it?
I mean, if you've got something particularly juicy that you want to reveal about why something was touched on that, then go for it. But other than that, I'd prefer it was kind of self-administered.
Oh, I think that one's a yes for me. Bit of both, actually. The next question is, did you learn something significant about yourself and or your impending ruin?
I'm psychically linked to the Queen of Monsters inside a rift in the Nightmare Realm.
It's true. I mean, it's up to you whether you think that's linked to... Oh, is that yourself or your impending ruin? Yeah, that seems like quite a good one.
Next up is, did you learn something significant about a fellow monster? And the final one is, did you uncover at least one key of the apocalypse or attempt to unlock Doom's door?
I think I'm going to disregard this question because I don't think you really had enough time, unless you feel like marking ruin. If someone's excited to like run head first for ruin, go ahead and do it. But I think getting one key in the space of whatever it was, 15, 20 minutes, is respectable progress for the team. But yes, it does appear to be your PC to answer the question. If your PC did not uncover at least one key, they mark ruin, which only underlines that I'm right, that ruin's going to be much easier to get.
So hang on a second. Everybody who doesn't get a key marks ruin per session.
Yes.
That's going to be... Whoa, looking forward to that, racing through that ruin.
Yes.
That's going to be great.
Thank you for listening to Black Armada Tales. We've been playing Apocalypse Keys by Jamila Arnajadi. If you'd like to find out more about Apocalypse Keys, check out evilhat.com/home/apocalypse-keys. Or check out the show notes where you'll find that link together with links to our stuff. See you next time.
Sorry, I'm getting quite tired.
Take some stims.
Can I have some stims?
I didn't know stims were an option. I've been operating without stims this whole year. What the hell?